This episode is brought to you by our sponsors at Adult Time, the ultimate subscription platform for premium adult content. With over 55,000 episodes, 300 channels, and new releases every single day, it's everything you'd want in one place. And you can use promo code BREEMILLS, that's BREEMILLS, to try a free week on us. Assuming you are 18 plus, of course, and you can discover how we do porn differently. Hi, my name is Bree Mills, and I am a porn director with a purpose. Now, throughout my career, I have covered just about every niche, and I've created some award-winning films and brands along the way. But now, I'm much more interested in getting to know the real people behind my characters. And that's because I believe adult entertainers can be some of the most powerful role models when it comes to sex ed, consent, empowerment, and wellness. By asking the right questions, our community can really help people better understand themselves. So, that's the mission of this podcast. Let's get up close. Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
We were saying this before we started rolling, but I love how this is our first time actually like meeting in person and getting to have a conversation.
Yeah, it's so sweet. It feels so intimate.
It does, right? Well, I was telling you before we started that for me, you know, the whole vision behind Up Close as a project is to really be able to showcase female sexuality and experience and advice. And that all starts with conversation. So that's what we're here to do today.
Let's have a chat.
Tell me a fun fact about yourself.
Something that I haven't talked about before. I don't think I've mentioned this often. I have a second degree besides being a veterinarian. I'm also a physical therapist.
Nice. There's a, I think Cherie in the industry also is a, at least for many years, was an active working physiotherapist.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, there you go. Message her.
Yes.
Like, oh my God, buddy.
So that is a fun fact. Let's talk about that for a moment. Why physiotherapy? Why veterinary work and then why adult work?
So just my life story.
So just your life. Yeah.
So when I was three, no, I'm joking. So I loved animals when I was younger and I wanted to be a vet, but I had a really traumatic euthanasia with one of my pets. And so I decided instead I wanted to do animal physiotherapy because there was a degree that was being offered not far away from my town. They canceled the master's as I came into the program, which was like really fun. And, So I was like, okay, well, I can't do this. So I just did physiotherapy on its own. Hated it. Well, hate's a strong word, but people drive me crazy, like animals more. So I decided to circle back and do the degree that I wanted to do when I was 3 years old.
Yep.
Studied for 10 years total. And then I worked in emergency for 5 years up until February when I moved here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What was it? Before we kind of go back and unpack everything that led you to where you are now, I have to ask, what was it like working within the emergency space?
I loved it, but it's definitely not for everyone.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this a lot before that I think people don't understand how kind they need to be to vets. You know, they have 6 times the national suicide rate. 50% of them will leave within the first 5 years of graduating because it's just people yelling at you, the money aspect, having to euthanize things, night shift, like it was fucked.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to swear?
You are.
Like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fucked.
Swear
was,
yeah, it sounds pretty fucked.
Yeah, I swear. So yeah, cool. But I mean, I still love it. But I came into porn while I was a vet and they both kind of like gave me a break from each other. It was really nice because I've always been creative. So when I started my company, that was my creative space to, you know, generate storylines and discussion and, you know, look at culture, I guess. And then on the side, I could have my little analytical, you know, life-saving problem solving.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Really exhausting though, but it was fun. I loved it.
Do you have any plans to kind of bring that back into your life now that you're kind of here and settled and obviously focusing a lot within, you know, the adult space?
Yeah, I want to. It's tricky with my visa. I'm only allowed to be here as a performer. So it'd be a long-term goal, but I'm going to try and sit the exams in April next year so that I at least have the paperwork to say that I can work here. And then I'll probably volunteer more so than work in a clinic.
Right.
Because I miss it. I miss being around animals all the time. It's so rewarding when you bring something back from the brink of death. Like, it's a really crazy feeling.
Yeah.
It's like an adrenaline rush. So I want to have that still, but with my mental sanity intact, basically.
Right. Good plan.
So I'll have some really great sex. And then on the side,
you'll save some
volunteering.
Animals.
Yeah, exactly. The best of both worlds.
All right, good. Well, so I'd love to learn about a little bit more about your upbringing. So can you kind of share with me some of, you know, some anecdotes about your upbringing, kind of what led you to end up, you know, developing the interest that you developed both, you know, as you just explained within, you know, kind of pragmatism and saving lives and helping out, and then also being creative and using adult and sex work as an outlet for creativity.
It's really odd to me that I ended up in porn, to be totally honest, because I was super socially awkward when I was younger. I struggled to talk to people. This would have freaked me out like 10 years ago. I would have really struggled with this. And I didn't date a lot. I didn't have a lot of sexual partners. So it was a really bizarre jump for me. It was a real in the deep end moment.
Mm-hmm.
I always was an animal person and I always wanted to be a vet. That was always in the background. Like, I always was saving the little bugs out of the pool. And I knew that was always going to be a part of my life at some point, but the porn really threw me for a loop. And it was only because a friend that was in porn suggested that I try it and that I sat and really thought about it. And I thought about it for a solid year because I was a vet at that time. I just graduated and I didn't want to destroy my chances of working as a vet.
Right.
Like, stigma is great.
Yep.
Yep. And I didn't want to lose my job. I didn't want to be looked down upon or, you know, thought of differently as a doctor or thought that I was less intelligent just because I did porn. But I thought about it for a year and I came out to the conclusion that I just didn't care what other people thought. So I tried it and really loved it. And I didn't really start doing the creative side of it straight away. I only started my own producing when I was trying to look for companies to work for in Australia and realized I couldn't go to America and Europe is, you know, I would spend 20 grand every time I went to Europe for 4 to 6 weeks to shoot. And so it was unsustainable. And so I went, well, let's see if I can do this. And then it turned out I really liked it and I was good at it. And so I just kept doing it. Yeah.
So when you were younger, what do you sort of pinpoint as some of the root kind of causes of that initial social anxiety that you had?
I think I grew up in a conservative city, I guess. I had a conservative family and I'm not saying that they did anything wrong. It was just sex wasn't a discussion. And I think that's a really common like storyline for a lot of children. Probably these days, I think sex is discussed a lot more openly. I think our society has progressed a lot from when I was, you know, 6 years old, 8 years old. But we never really had conversations about it. And then I just had anxiety. I was just an anxious kid. Mm-hmm. It was just a part of my personality, I guess. So that made it really difficult for me to just talk to people. And so the combination of all of that meant that it was really hard for me to, I mean, I was flat out trying to figure myself out, let alone boys or girls, or if I even liked girls, or, you know, that conversation in my head didn't even happen until my 20s.
Right.
Because I grew up with boy meets girl,
you
know? I didn't have any of that conversation. I didn't have anyone in my family around me that gave me a different viewpoint on life. And so it was a very sheltered kind of childhood. Even my high school, bless them. I mean, they were pretty open for a high school, but I still had a convent in the middle of my school. A nun was my principal. Our sex talk when we were, thank God it was when we were 15 and we knew better, but the talk was basically don't have sex until you're married. And if you're going to have sex, don't use a condom.
Yeah.
I remember that conversation. So yeah, I just grew up in an environment that didn't promote self searching.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but interestingly, like how you discovered your love for animals, right? Maybe because you did feel some kind of natural, little bit of natural anxiety with other people, but then, you know, developed that really sort of strong bond with animals. I'm sure there's probably a correlation there.
Yeah, for sure. Like animals understood me.
Yeah.
Like they were always my best friends. When I couldn't talk to people, I could talk to, you know, my pets.
Yep.
And I got a lot of solace out of them. So for sure, I think that's why. You know, I remember once my parents lost me. It was like storming. I was still in diapers. They were panicking. They were getting ready to call the police. And then they opened the door, the front veranda door. And I was just sitting like chatting to my Rottweiler buddy in the rain. I couldn't speak words because I was in diapers. I was just gaggling away.
Yep.
You know, that was the way I was.
What's your earliest memory of sexuality, even within that sort of sheltered space where you maybe didn't quite know what it was you were feeling?
I remember when I first started experimenting with masturbation.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember enjoying the feeling, but feeling uncomfortable about the fact that I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just played around because why not? It felt good. And also because I couldn't talk to boys and that didn't really feel attainable to me, I kind of explored with myself privately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that helped me to grow a little bit and be able to be a little bit more social with people as I got older. But at that time, I didn't really understand, you know, what I was feeling or like, you know, hormones and living in a sheltered environment.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's happening. I like this, but I don't know if I should be doing this.
Like if I do this, it feels good. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to keep doing it. Yeah,
exactly. And I used to always like sit in the shower and put the shower on so no one could hear me.
Oh, there you go. See, that's right.
Always a shower.
that's funny. I remember I used to do the same thing, but with the bath running.
Right? Yeah.
So same sort of distracting. Yeah, that's funny. When you think about, I always like to ask the question of like early kind of pop culture references, because I can certainly remember in my own, you know, kind of like youth, a couple of scenes in movies that like, at least even if I didn't know what it was, like it kind of sparked this like feeling. Because you grew up kind of in a more sheltered conservative environment, what kind of, you know, kind of pop culture references did you get exposed to? And can you remember kind of one or any of those early moments that kind of made you think like,
That is a good question. To be honest, I didn't watch a lot of media. It wasn't that I didn't watch movies or anything. It just wasn't my interest. I was like a book nerd. I was really artsy. I didn't do a lot of that. I think I got more of my references that made me sit and think back from things like art more so than TV.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I really have any moments with movies and media and TV where I sat and was like, oh, wow, that's really profound and that's made me think X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
It just wasn't like a part of my world. But if I saw, you know, and like a painting of a naked woman, or if I saw, I don't know, Dali experimenting with like perception of life, I'd be like, well, that's really wild. Like, that's kind of cool. So I didn't have, I think it's different coming from Australia versus America. Mm-hmm. Even though we're exposed to media, we don't have the same emphasis on it in Australia as I feel here. Like when I moved here, I felt it straight away. Everyone could like name every actor and everyone's talking about going to see a movie at the cinemas on the weekend. And I was sitting there thinking, I haven't been inside a cinema for like a decade. Like it's been forever.
Yeah.
Really, people do that still? I thought you all just watched TV and watched a movie. So,
but you do masturbate to Salvador Dali. So.
No, I didn't. What did I even think about when I masturbated? For me, when I first started masturbating, I really struggled to come, to be honest. It took a really long time to learn my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't really think about anything other than the feeling that I was having at the time. But sometimes thinking about the feeling that intensely made it harder for me to come.
Yep.
And I ended up in this little like cycle in my head, like, you know, think about that feeling, you're going to come, you know, and it would make it harder. I didn't really relax into that until I was, gosh, like 28.
Yeah.
Like late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would that be like around the sort of the first time that you would say that you started experiencing orgasms, or did you experience orgasms like earlier on when you were learning kind of your own body and masturbating? You just didn't maybe quite know what it was, or?
Oh, I definitely had orgasms when I was younger, mm-hmm. and I knew what they were. I just didn't have a trigger for them per se. Mm-hmm. It's funny that I didn't really sit and think about a lot of storylines or things in my head that would help me come. I didn't mm-hmm. think about that as a tactic until I started working in porn.
Right.
And then I started researching companies, and then I, you know, started watching porn because I didn't even watch porn when I was younger. And then I thought, oh, shit, this is really cool. Particularly I got into CNC. Mm-hmm. I think there's really interesting power dynamics and like discussions in CNC. And I found that really exciting and titillating. And so that kind of, then I would start to put stories into my head.
Yeah.
And so, but that didn't happen until I was, you know, quite a bit older, which is interesting because most people that I see from porn who have do podcasts and talk about their upbringing and their sexuality, they're often like outrageously sexual when they're younger and they have all these crazy stories and experiences
yep.
and they've experimented. And then there was like me who I just didn't, it didn't even come across my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's actually like one of the things I'm really curious about with you, because I found in my experience, it was somewhat similar. Like obviously I'm not working in front of the camera, but like as, mm-hmm. as a producer and director, when I got into the industry, I had like my experience with porn was so like stereotypical and minimal that I found like in that first year, just the sort of being exposed to that much stimulus really kind of like you, it's almost like you have that like kind of wild first year of like, wow, I didn't know this.
Like this.
Yeah, exactly. And then it like tapers off. But yeah. I wonder if it's the opposite when you're coming from like a really sort of sexually charged experience background, you come into porn, it's like, oh, more of this again.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, exactly.
But you know, what do you think are some of the biggest myths about female sexuality? We talked about the fact that, you know, we're really trying to showcase in authenticity what female sexuality is about. And of course that is about so many different things, but what rings true to you about your own sexuality as you've kind of come into it? Mm. And what do you feel are some of the biggest myths out there about in particular female sexuality?
I think the biggest one for me is pleasure doesn't equal orgasm and orgasm doesn't equal pleasure. Mm-hmm. I think that stereotypically in the way that the media has discussed sex, there is this like really heavy connotation that you have to come to enjoy yourself or to be good at sex and vice versa. And I think particularly men get so caught up in making a woman come. And orgasms are great, but there's so many different types of orgasms. And they're not necessarily the big O that everyone sees in media. And I think people need to just take a breath and calm down with that. And I think people also really struggle to talk about, I think people think that they should just know how to make a girl come. And the reality is our bodies are so, even men's bodies vary a lot, but I think with women in particular, there's a special kind of uniqueness to every person and what they need to orgasm and what they need to feel pleasure. And it's just a conversation that should be really easy, but a lot of people struggle to have that conversation, mm-hmm. like what makes you turned on and what helps you. So I think they're the biggest myths. I wish people would talk about what their partner wants specifically a little bit more. And I also wish people would just take a breath with orgasm and not panic. Like I've definitely had lovers in the past where they get caught up in the fact that, you know, they don't make me come every single time. And it's like, I don't care. I'm having fun. Still feels great.
Yeah.
You know, like chill. I'm not worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even when you were saying like when you were kind of first discovering your own body and pleasing yourself, that even yeah. within yourself, there was sort of that like, I need to reach this conclusion
yeah.
and like that frustration. So it's almost like kind of ingrained in all of us, right?
Yeah.
Especially for women, like there must be this sort of, you know, because we don't physically see an ejaculation, there has to be this sort of, you know, almost performative one that comes out.
Mm, this big ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we undo all of that ingrained feeling and start to build back the fact that, you know, self-pleasure does not always equate orgasm?
I think sex education has a lot to speak for mm-hmm. the way that people interpret sex in general. Mm-hmm. I was a part of a discussion back when I first moved here about sex ed and also the space of verification of faces for porn.
Yes.
That Corey Silverstein
ran.
And I remember doing research on sex ed in America before I came into talk, because I didn't know, I only knew the Australian space. And it's crazy how many schools don't even have a sex education program. Apparently only 40% of schools use the curriculum that's recommended to teach sex. And then despite those schools doing it, most of them don't do it well anyway, because they don't have the funding. The teachers aren't being paid extra, or someone is too nervous to take it on, because in America in particular, the political viewpoints and cultural viewpoints that different, you know, groups of people have is very scary.
Yeah.
To take on that responsibility of teaching kids about that is a big deal. So I think there needs to be, and I don't know what the answer is. I've said for the longest time, I would love to make a website that is holistic and covers sex education in its entirety, according to the curriculum. I don't think I've seen a website yet to date that starts from kindergarten, which is what the curriculum actually recommends.
Yeah.
I see them talking to teenagers. I see them talking to kids in that space, but there's nothing that really covers the whole space.
Yeah.
And when kids are that small, it's not necessarily talking about sex itself. It might just be talking about inappropriate touching, like a stranger cannot touch you in this way. But that's still sex education.
Yeah, absolutely. And it speaks to the whole conversation about like consent and communication and teaching kids when they're very young, you know, their own boundaries, but also to respect other boundaries.
Yeah.
Which is definitely something that when you're young and you don't have that knowledge or those facets, like, you know, you're just as likely to infringe on someone else's consent without knowledge as it on you. So it definitely is something that I agree, even if it's not in that label, like we need to start educating people on how to communicate from a very early age.
And I think it does have to be a space outside of the education system, because I don't think it's fair to expect schools to cover that because they just don't have the funding. I also think that although parents should have a big role in this, a lot of parents aren't educated themselves. So you can't expect an uneducated person in that space to know what to teach their kid. Like if they don't know, we can't expect them to teach appropriately. So there needs to be a resource that kind of like helps everyone at every stage.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and generational, you know, trauma is very real, right? So you're oftentimes the coming off of what your parents and their parents and, you know, your own particular culture have kind of predetermined as the knowledge that you can apply to this subject. And it definitely becomes problematic. Yeah. No, as a parent, I would say that for sure. And also sexuality evolves over time. So like you said, you know, growing up, you know, while you can look back now and sort of identify, oh, you know, this is how I was and this is maybe what led me into who I am today, like sexuality evolves over time.
Yeah.
So I want to hear more about, for you, that kind of dramatic switch from, you know, your life before porn to like kind of the idea of, well, what if I experimented with porn as a means to, you know, explore my sexuality? How did you come to that decision? Because it's one that probably a lot of people wouldn't necessarily go to as their first choice.
Yeah, it was a long choice. I did a lot of research. I looked up what people in the industry had said, both the good and the bad. And I thought about my degree and I looked into the laws as to whether people could discriminate against me in Australia. Like I went deep. I deep dove. But the actual decision itself, I don't know. It was really just like a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
I just went, fuck it. Whatever. I don't know. I wish it was a lot more complicated than that. I just did my research and then I sat back and went, well, I'm not going to know unless I try it. And I think at that point I was sick of being so sequestered and I wanted to step outside of my box, but I still felt a little socially awkward about doing it. So porn gave me like parameters that I could explore within and then see if I liked it. And then from there, you know, that bled into my personal life in a positive way.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by our sponsors at Adult Time, the ultimate subscription platform for premium adult content. With over 55,000 episodes, 300 channels, and new releases every single day, it's everything you'd want in one place. And you can use promo code BREEMILLS, that's B-R-E-E-M-I-L-L-S, to try a free week on us. assuming you are 18 plus, of course, and you can discover how we do porn differently.
Yeah.
So what, I'm going to ask this just as a funny off topic question, but it might trigger some interesting responses.
Yeah.
what is, when you think back on your sort of pre-porn sexual experiences, what stands out to you as the most significant that you had? And was it significant in being profound, or was it significant in being embarrassing? Or what's the story that stands out about your, when you look back on your sexuality in the earlier years, that really set you on the course for where you are today?
All of my dating was horrific. Like, I don't choose well. I was always the person to ask people out. It was rare for someone to ask me out, and I just chose badly. I could give you like 12 stories that are like, there's the guy who, when he came, looked like he was eating a double quarter pounder while being fisted. There's the guy who told me that he wrote poems about girls on Tinder, and then he started to tell me the poem, and it went, I tuned out after the first two lines because I got traumatized. I just kind of blacked out. But he said, there once was a girl named Kelly whose vagina was a little bit smelly. And it went downhill from there. Like, there's so many bad stories. I think that's also a part of why I didn't really date a lot, because every time I had one of those experiences, I was like, oh, fuck. Do I need to date?
Yeah.
Do I want to do this rodeo again?
I want to hear about Kelly. I don't leave Kelly alone. Yeah.
And the couple of people that I had good experiences with, they like moved into state or something. It just fizzled. So I just didn't get really lucky, to be honest. But I wasn't actively seeking a numbers game or anything like mm-hmm. that. So I don't know if it's just that I didn't have a lot of dating experience, but I just, yeah. I got, you know, I had people trying to pick me up using the, you must have fallen from heaven because you looked like an angel thing. Like, I've had all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So what advice would you have for if someone was going to approach you now to ask you on a date? What would Charlie want now with all the knowledge that she has and experience that she has?
My love languages are like touch and food. So, and I also like, knowing people as friends often before they become lovers. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. For me, I just think it gives me a bit of extra depth to knowing them. And it doesn't mean that I care more or less about anything. It's just, I don't know. I just kind of like to know people when I'm going to fuck them. I think especially now that I work in porn, I turn up to work all the time and I've never met the person. It's like, hi, I'm going to have sex with you today. And like, that's the end of it. So for me in my personal life, as much as I adore sex and it's a huge part of my identity now, what's more important to me is all of the things outside of sex, like spending time with someone, going to dinner, mm-hmm. like going surfing or, you know, anything outside of the bedroom itself is really important to me. So, you know, love language outside of sex is where it's at for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
How do you prioritize your sort of sexual health and wellness now that sexuality has really become such, you know, a big part of your life, both professionally and within your own identity?
I mean, our industry is really interesting because it forces you to prioritize your sexual health. Like we have to get tested, right, so that we can work. But I just think that I became a lot more aware of facts around sexual health. I became a lot more educated. Our community educated me significantly and taught me a lot about how to protect myself. And I learned that protection doesn't just have to mean a condom. There's a lot of different ways of protecting yourself. There's also emotional protection, and which I'm very grateful for. I think that's the thing that I'm most grateful for in coming into porn is what it's taught me about myself and my boundaries and also mm-hmm. about how to look after myself health-wise. And I mean, I didn't think about it at all before I came into the adult industry. Mm. Like, it wasn't a discussion I ever had. No one told me that I should be getting tested for STDs when I was a teenager. It was a non-conversation.
Yeah. So what are some of those big lessons that you did learn from the community that you would, you know, that you think that really any woman would be beneficial to learn from?
Yeah, I think that sleeping with a lot of people doesn't mean that you're being unsafe. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. I think there's still a big stigma around that. And I think that every porn star out there would agree that they've been prejudiced or stigmatized against based upon the fact of their job. Mm-hmm. At some point, it doesn't mean that we're not looking after ourselves. You know, there are ways to protect yourself, be it male condoms, female condoms, which a lot of people don't know about, the pill, there's PrEP, like there's a million different things that people can reach for to look after themselves, even just getting tested regularly. And I think being self-aware of the people that you're sleeping with and the effects that your decisions in your life have on them, I think is really important. Something that we think about, but the general public probably don't think about.
Yeah.
They go have a one night stand. They're not thinking that in 2 weeks time when they have another one night stand that they should tell that person that 2 weeks ago they had a one night stand without a condom or something like that. I had a very fast and comprehensive education.
Yes, yeah. A crash course.
Yeah.
What are like essentials that you're going to take in your set bag now? Because even within that, right, there's like a lot of a value in knowing, you know, what's in the suitcase.
What do I have in there at the moment? I have like French tip nail polish, because I'm always chipping mine. I have an IUD, so I don't get a period, but I used to carry sponges in case I had my period. I still carry condoms just in case, because it's common. Like it's not common for sets to have a scene where someone wants to use a condom, but I carry them just in case. Someone doesn't feel comfortable. And female condoms as well, actually, I have as well. I always have, I don't know, lotion to make my skin smooth. I don't know. Like my bag is full of everything now. I always have lube in case it's forgotten. I don't know. I could probably go to my bag and pull anything out that I needed just for like my everyday and I'd be fine.
Yeah. If I know you spoke a lot about wishing there was sort of a commonplace resource for sex education and then how that's sort of like a bucket list, you know? So if you were able to take over the sex ed curriculum for a day, what would be your top subjects that, you know, you would use that time to help educate people on, especially younger people?
Yes means yes, no means no, and no response means no.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I definitely, my first experience having sex, I don't have any ill will towards the guy that was involved because he was young and he just didn't get it. But I didn't say no, but I meant no.
Yeah.
Which is technically a date rape situation. And I used to feel a lot of shame around calling it that because it sounds like I'm blaming him per se for not asking. It's not necessarily that, but I didn't say yes and I was too socially awkward to say no to him. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up in a position where I felt terrible after that. And it did traumatize me a little bit. And I think it's really common for people to get into situations, especially at that age, as a teenager, when you feel like you have to be with someone in order to be cool or to be like, you know, like especially these days, I think society is trending towards a more sexually charged kind of, not a stereotype, but an identity. Like we talk a lot more about sex, which is good, but it's important to also have the discussion that it's okay if you're not like that. I think sometimes media at the moment is almost pushing it too far in the other direction. We need to remind kids in particular that it's okay to just take a step back and you don't have to say yes to someone just because you think that that is what you should be doing at your age. And because in that movie, everyone was having sex, you know, like take your time. It doesn't matter if it takes a long time for you to get there.
Well, once again, we come back to that whole, the whole concept of the importance of like building communication skills into people from the very get-go, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I remember when I was in high school, that, you know, if someone gave someone a hand job, it was very scandalous.
Yeah.
Right? Like it was, I distinctly remember the two people that, you know, gave each other hand jobs. It was scandalous.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you know, because there's no conversations around sex and people are, you know, turning to the internet and stuff just to like explore and learn. And then what they're seeing are oftentimes like fantasy portrayals of stuff that we make, you know, as entertainment. I think the percentage of, you know, young people who for their first sexual experience are doing more extreme acts just because it's like, okay, that's what people are doing on Pornhub, therefore that's what sex must be. And then like, because they don't know how to communicate, people are doing things that they might not be ready for, or they think that's also what I should be doing. And so I think you come back to that point where, building communication is the key. And it's something to do in from like the very earliest stage. So how do you approach it? I mean, I know consent is a huge thing within our industry and on our professional sets. How do you approach consent within your own intimate relationships nowadays?
I'm just a very vocal person. It's hard to get consent from me. I tend to just be like, do this or please don't do this today. Like, for example, if I was having sex today, I got anally fisted yesterday and sitting is an interesting feeling at the moment. So I would be like, please don't touch my butt today.
That has completely changed the entire tone of this podcast. Now, sitting across from you as you're wiggling in your chair, I now know why.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the industry taught me how to just say what I want and what I don't want. I struggled with it before I was in porn. So I understand that like awkwardness of wanting to say, no, I don't want you to do this. But it's not hard anymore for me.
One, I always, I'm always, because of course, like we do in-depth consent conversations for every production, and we always film them mostly so that, you know, we have it as reference material and training material. But I often think about the value that there would be in offering those publicly for people to watch, you know, in addition to watching the scene. And I've always a little bit on the fence about it, right? Like in terms of, you know, what value that would bring. But, you know, what ways do you feel, and this is also a question, like what level of accountability / responsibility do you feel that we as a community can have to help people see the importance of those conversations and even how to have them?
I think it's not about our community per se. I think it's a personal choice as to whether you want to be a part of that space for discussion. Because when I talk about porn, I talked about this recently, I look at porn as Netflix. So when you go to Netflix, you can go watch a documentary that talks about factual information in a real life sense, but you can also go watch Spider-Man and you're not going to sit there thinking that you can shoot spider webs from your fingers after you finish watching Spider-Man. And it's the same deal in porn. There are companies that provide that educational space and try to provide a more realistic expectation in the movies of what sex is in real life. But the vast majority of it is entertainment. And It's not our job to be like, well, we have to educate people. I think there are better ways to educate people than that. I agree it would be interesting to consider releasing that information. The only thing that I would worry about with that is that I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing to lessen that veil between fans and performers. But if there is a performer on there who's known for being crazy into anal and that day she's like, no, is that going to affect her? I don't know. It's a tricky one. But I think that performers these days are getting more and more vocal regardless about, you know, talking about it. I mean, this podcast is the perfect example. Like you as a person and as a company have chosen to make a space where we can talk about this. And this is a perfect instance of where our industry has gone, you know what, there's a little gap here that really needs to be filled. And we're prepared to take that educational spot. So kudos to you to the team, because I think it's really important. And stuff like this is the perfect thing to kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, consent to being, to opening up and sharing your consent talks is also a really important form of consent too, right? So certainly anything we would do along those lines, consent would be right at the beginning to make sure it was something someone was comfortable with. But what do you think, I'd love to hear your perspective. Obviously you've come in and shot for our new studio up close, which is all about, you know, unscripted, authentic, experiences of female pleasure and really trying to bring female pleasure into the forefront of our content. How does that vision connect to you? And what do you think in general about the importance of like showcasing female pleasure and authentic female expression within the adult space?
Well, I love it, especially because it's where I started really. In Australia, I think there's much more of a trend towards authenticity with porn. There's not a lot of companies, but the companies that do it, we were talking earlier about a company that does a thing called Beautiful Agony, where yes. they literally video just the face of people as they orgasm, as they masturbate and then orgasm. And so my introduction into porn was through those avenues. And so I got to just experience self-pleasure without the bells and whistles of a porn set and mm-hmm. a storyline. And that was a really gentle and a really special way to come into porn that I'm really grateful for. And I love watching that, like, I've had a subscription to that company in the past and I love watching it. It's nice to see how people just interact naturally mm-hmm. rather than feeling like they have to open up to a particular camera. Or, you know, the porn is such a theatrical display sometimes, and there's ways that you can make it authentic still, but it's still designed for a third person, which is the viewer and the right. consumer. Whereas this is a little bit more authentic. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really cool idea. Plus, it's really nice for me to come onto a set and be able to have my hair and my makeup the way that I want and not have to be dressed as a MILF yeah. or a teacher. You know, I can dress as in like a sundress and, you know, that's cool. And yep. I don't have to worry about anything, you know, like it's a really great idea. And I think that it gives space for performers to be a bit more vulnerable with their fans as well, to be able to show what they actually love.
Yeah, which probably my biggest learning throughout the few years that I've been doing documentary stuff, and certainly like in the development of this project, is just what an ask that is. Mm. You know, sometimes we take it for granted as like, oh, this is going to be an easy day, right? Because you just got to be yourself. Oh, wait a minute. Just being yourself is sometimes really not the easiest thing to do, right?
Yeah.
So I've developed a real sensitivity to, you know, just what I'm asking in terms of that, and been so grateful for the people that we've had for the project so far, because it is an ask, and it is really giving something of yourself that one shouldn't take for granted is easy to give.
It's a very vulnerable position to put yourself in. Mm-hmm. I remember when I kind of went down the rabbit hole of sex educational platforms, I came across Oh My God Yes. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I watched that, I thought, geez, these women are so brave to put themselves on the internet like this and talk about what gets them off and what doesn't, and the fact that it might take them 45 minutes. You know, I think often in porn as well, because a lot of people who are sexually charged get attracted into porn, the conversations tend to be around much faster experiences, whereas Oh My God Yes, there's a lot of discussion about how it's okay if it takes you an hour to orgasm. And I just remember thinking that is like good on them for being able to give that space mm-hmm. for other people to learn from them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just to kind of wrap up our questions, coming back to the kind of present tense, now that you've been like, you know, heavily in the porn space for the last few years, both within your own production and coming and shooting here in the States, what impact has that had on your own consumption of spicy material? So like, you mentioned it wasn't necessarily something you watched a lot growing up, but what's on your watch list now, if anything?
It depends. So I definitely fantasize a lot more mm-hmm. because I'm always thinking of new creative storylines. And so definitely I'm constantly in my fantasizing about you, probably. Totally.
I can't get a massage, you know.
No, I really want a happy ending. I was talking about this the other day. No one has ever offered me one. And I'm almost getting more massages because I want it to be offered to me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the dodgiest places I can fucking go to. Can someone please offer it? If you see me walk in, please give it to me.
Yeah. And I mean, as you know, we have a studio called Fantasy Massage. So I've probably, you know, shot, I don't even know how many thousands of massages now. So now like, I just want a wholesome, you know, non-sexual massage from the other way. But you can't lie in the room without just thinking about like, oh, I could use that on a set, or oh, what if she, the masseuse character, did this, and then it kind of ruins the relaxation.
Exactly. For sure. And then once I have a fantasy in my head, then I start like doing my market research.
Yeah.
And so that's when I go down the road and look at different porn videos. But there are certain companies that I maintain subscriptions to periodically that I just love for the sake of loving. Adult Time I've had before. Lust Cinema is another big one that I adore. I've always been the kind of person that feels like, as much as Gonzo's fun and I love the idea of just fucking someone, stories give a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me, it's sex is not the thing that I'm looking for. It's the undercurrent behind sex. It's the little tingle, the little play between people before anything actually happens. Mm-hmm. And that's my favorite part of porn. It's my favorite part of my personal life. It's the schmoozing, the romancing side of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like when you catch the person's eye for the first time yeah. and like all the bill. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, so I look for porn that kind of is along those lines, or I look for CNC because it's yeah. hard.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
I was going to say, why don't you just quickly explain for those who don't know what CNC stands for?
Yeah, it's consensual non-consent. So it's storylines where you have given consent beforehand that you're not going to consent in the storyline so that you can live out a power dynamic, basically.
Yeah.
It's like probably the most basic way to describe it.
And when did that kind of get into your fantasy Rolodex?
Ooh, pretty.
And why?
I think because I was so socially awkward, there was a part of me that just wanted someone to just come in and take that pressure away from me,
mm-hmm.
just fuck me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that idea of someone just forcing themselves on me in a way was like a really interesting feeling for me, and it made me feel wanted
mm-hmm.
sexually. And so I think it was born from there. And then, I just liked it and then yeah. kept watching it. And I've kind of developed it more over time, and I've understood it more. In the beginning, I thought it was a little shameful. I think a lot of people who first get into that space can definitely identify with that idea mm-hmm. that they shouldn't be feeling like that and they shouldn't be fantasizing about that, or it makes them bad, and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very consensual power dynamic. It doesn't mean that I ever want bad things to happen to me. I just want to explore the power dynamic and the feelings associated
yeah.
with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think somebody once told me that, you know, the beauty of porn is it's all of the things that you're not likely to do in your real mm-hmm. life, right? So there is that element of that pure fantasy to it.
Yeah.
So for women out there who might be feeling shameful or insecure about their own sexual identities and who are watching this or listening to this, what advice would you give them?
There are a lot of really good forums and spaces where you can kind of discuss with other people. I think therapy is excellent as well. So there's no shame with getting a professional to talk to about your self-esteem and trying to work your way through that. I think that's, to be honest, that's probably the best advice I can give. I think if you're feeling shameful about your sexuality, it's speaking to how you view yourself as a person mm-hmm. and where you fit sexuality in with your identity. And it doesn't have to be a shameful thing. And I think a professional really is the best person to help someone through that. You know, forums are still good. It's good to go to other people who have experienced it or can help you through it, but don't, you know, take it with a grain of salt if they're not actually a professional in mm-hmm. that space. You know what I mean? That would be my advice.
Well, that's very good advice, Charlie. It's been a pleasure to get to know you today and to be able to talk about your own background, about what's going through that dirty little mind, both before and during and after your entry into porn. I can't wait to see what you do with the studio and, of course, all the amazing work you've been doing with Adult Time. So we're really blessed to get to work with you. And thank you so much for coming and talking to me today.
Thank you. I was like really grateful to meet you, obviously, because we talked earlier.
Yeah.
I mentioned this before as well, that when I was first getting into porn, full stop, I messaged three people and I particularly messaged people that I felt like I could identify with in the porn space. And it was Jackie St. James, Holly Randall, and yourself. And you gave me a lot of your time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it was I really appreciate, I wasn't anyone. I didn't have a name. I don't know if I had a performer name even at that point. And you gave me a lot of good advice and time, and I think that really speaks to who you are as a person.
Oh,
and I'm
very
grateful.
You. Good. I'm like, I hope what I said was good.
It was good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Excellent.
Yeah.
But all the
you
more,
hold a high bar for people in the industry.
Oh, cool.
In a positive way.
Good. Well, I'm happy to do that. So we'll see that advice get played out. I'm sure you're doing wonderfully. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow, I just finished the coolest conversation with Charlie Ford, and there's a line she said that really stuck out to me, that pleasure does not always equal orgasm, and orgasm does not always equal pleasure. And the whole reason we have these conversations are to be able to debunk myths just like that. So thank you, Charlie. If you enjoyed this conversation, if you want to check Charlie out and support her,
If you believe in what we are doing and want to learn more about our podcast and our studio, please do us a favor. You can like, you can comment, you can subscribe to this video. We also have all of our social links listed in the episode description below, so you can get to know all of us a lot better. We really appreciate your support. This is a very important subject that we want to shine a light on. So you can tune in next week and you can see us do it again with another conversation. Until then, let's keep it real. Thank you so much.